Welcome to another Shadovich Creek message on beautiful Shadovich Creek, and the fall colors are here. We're studying a parable of trials and deliverance, a parable of trials and rescues. We're studying the book of Esther. Now, go back in time when we are talking about this period of time. Jerusalem was destroyed, and the exiles go to Babylon in 586 B.C. The first exiles return to Jerusalem in 538 B.C. Around 510 B.C., 516 B.C., the temple was completed. Artaxerxes becomes king of Persia in 486 B.C. Esther becomes queen in 479 B.C. Haman's decree to destroy the Jews was in 474 B.C. And the first feast of Purim was celebrated in 473. Now, Esther means star, and it could have been a shortened form of Ishtar, which was a goddess of the heavens. Haman, the Agagite. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Agag. Now, Saul was told by God to go in and kill all of these Agagites. Kill every one of them, man, woman, child, all their animals and everything, because they were diseased. Saul chose to save and rescue Agag, King Agag. Well, now Haman is a descendant of the man that he rescued and saved. So here we have a parable of what we call disobedience in Saul's part. Haman means noise or tumult. Noise or tumult. Now, Mordecai means warrior, and also a worshiper of Murdoch in Persian. Esther is a Persian word. Haman is a Persian word. And then, of course, Artaxerxes, it means that, and it's in Persian also, it means that he shall rule through truth. He shall rule through truth. Now, let me read what the writer has written here about the book of Esther on page 821 in this study, what we call the International Version of the Life Application Bible. I want to read a little bit of what this man says here. Drama, power, romance, intrigue. This is the stuff of which best-selling books are made, and also what movies are made of. Is that all right? Even the drama, the intrigue, romance, and power, and struggles. The good against the bad. That's all the cowboy movies are that way also. This is not a piece of fiction that we're reading here. This is true history. This book is more than entertaining. It is truth. It is the power of God, God's eternal purpose. The book of Esther begins with Queen Vashti refusing to obey an order from her husband to show herself. And he banishes her. And then he begins searching for another beautiful bride. And all the women in the whole empire are brought together. And Esther has beauty. Now, Esther's beauty was given to her by God for his God's eternal purpose. Her beauty was given to her to bring about the rescue of his people. Remember, this is a parable of trials and rescues. A parable of trials and rescues and God's unpreventable progress and his eternal purpose with his people Israel. Now, we have to find out these people here didn't go back either, did they? The Magi might have been composed of this group of people later on when the Lord was born. All the beautiful women in the empire bring them into the royal harem. Esther, a young Jewish woman, was one of those chosen to be in royal harem. King Artaxerxes so pleased with Esther that he made her his queen. not only his concubine, but his queen. Now, meanwhile, Mordecai, Esther's older cousin, became a government official, and during this tenure, during his rule, he foiled an assassination plot to kill the king. The ambitious and self-serving Haman was appointed second in command in the empire. When Mordecai refused to bow in reverence to him, Haman became furious and determined to destroy Mordecai. Remember what Haman means? Noise and turmoil. The devil is always stirring up dust, isn't he? The devil is always stirring up dust. The word deacon, in the New Testament, one of the offices in the church, one of the two offices, the deacon means to stir up dust. But it means the right kind of dust. So many times deacons stir up the wrong kind of dust. And Haman here was definitely stirring up the wrong kind of dust. To accomplish his vengeful deed, Haman deceived the king and persuaded him to issue an edict condemning the Jews to death. Mordecai told Queen Esther about this edict, and she decided to risk her life to save her people. Esther asked King Xerxes and Haman to be her guests at a banquet. During the feast, the king asked Esther what she really wanted, and he promised to give her anything, and Esther simply invited both men to another banquet the next day. That night, unable to sleep, the king was flipping through some of the records, some boring reading, the accounts of his reign. In the royal archives, when he read the assassination plot that Mordecai thwarted, surprised to learn that Mordecai had never been rewarded for his deed, the king asked Haman what should be done to properly thank a hero. Haman thought that the king was talking about him. And so he described a lavish reward. A lavish reward. The king agreed, but to Haman's shock and utter humiliation, he learned that Mordecai was the person to be honored, and he hated Mordecai. This is how God's eternal purpose, remember? You know, God let Moses be born into the world. Moses was born, and he was condemned to death when he was born. They threw him in the river in Egypt, and God had Pharaoh's daughter pick him up and draw him out and called his name Moshe. Rescue. I rescued him. I drew him out of the Nile. Now, he learned that Mordecai was the person to be honored, and of course, he was spitting nails. During the second banquet, the king asked Esther what she desired. She replied that someone had plotted to destroy her and her people, and she named Haman as the culprit. Immediately, the king sentenced Haman to die on the gallows that he had built for Mordecai. Now, these gallows are not gallows to be hung on. This is the origin of the crucifixion. At this time, they had a stake that was sharpened. Haman, and we'll read this a little later on, Haman had a gallows 75 feet in the sky built. And he was going to strip Mordecai off naked and set him atop this sharpened stake, and his body would slowly go down and rupture all of his internal organs, and he would bleed to death. This was the origin of crucifixion. Later on, they would nail them to that stake. It was a slow process of death. The Jews were guaranteed protection throughout the land. To celebrate this historic occasion, the Feast of Purim was established, and Jesus celebrated this feast also. Because of Queen Esther's courageous act, the whole nation was saved. Seeing her God-given opportunity, she seized it, and her life made no difference. Read Esther and watch for God to work in your life. We can apply this book to our lives today. Now, let's go back again and look at some of the statistics and some of the purposes of the book of Esther. This book is written to demonstrate the sovereignty and loving care and unpreventable progress in God's eternal purpose. The author is unknown. It could possibly be Mordecai in Esther 9 and verse 29. Some have suggested Ezra or Nehemiah, because of their time. Now, we have Nehemiah and Esther. Esther is actually about 30 years before Nehemiah. The date written is approximately 483 to 471 B.C. Remember, the higher numbers go back further and come back lower as you get close to A.D. And we're talking about before Christ here. It calls it before the common area and all other societies that don't want to name the name of Christ at all. The key, one of the key verses in the book of Esther is, "For if you remain silent this time, relief and deliverance from the Jews will arise from another place." No place in the book of Esther is the name of God referred to, but here God is referred to here. The other place is God. "But you and your father's family will perish, and who knows but that you have come to this royal position for a time such as this," 4:14. The most important people are Artaxerxes, Esther, Mordecai, and Haman. And today, the Jews have this feast of Purim, and it's like Halloween in the rest of the world. They put on these masks, they make all these noisemakers. Remember what Haman means? It means to make a lot of noise and turmoil. And so they make all these things, and every time the name of Haman is mentioned, when they read the book of Esther, they say, "Boo!" Now, the book of Esther is one of the only two books in the Bible that's named after a woman. So we have that. Do you hear that, women? All right. The book of Esther is one of the only two books in the Bible named after a woman. Esther becomes queen from Esther 1:1 through 2:23. The Jews are threatened, 3:1 through 4:17. And Esther intercedes for the Jews, 5:1 through 8:17. And the Jews are finally delivered in 9:1 through 10:3. The book of Esther, remember, is a type of God's eternal purpose and His unpreventable progress. The book of Esther tells of the circumstances that were essential to the survival of God's people in Persia. And remember, these didn't go back. God is sovereign over their lives even to this day. Now remember, Haman was a descendant of the terrible king Agag, which Saul spared. On February the 28th, the Jews celebrate the Feast of Purim, which symbolizes God's deliverance. Purim means lots. Lots. Such as those used by Haman to set the date for the extermination of all the Jews from Persia. But God overruled, using Queen Esther to intercede on behalf of Jews. Now let's start. I want you to remember today, it takes a lot of wisdom to survive in an unbelieving world today. It takes a lot of wisdom to survive and exist in an unbelieving world. We don't live in the absolute perfect situation. We don't live in an idealistic world. This is what happened during the time of Xerxes. The Xerxes, who ruled over 120 provinces stretching from India to Kush. At the time, King Xerxes reigned from his royal throne in the citadel of Susa. Susa is down by the Persian Gulf. Now here we have this Medo-Persian Empire. And in the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his nobles and officials and the military leaders of Persian Media. The princes and the nobles and the provinces were present. For a full 180 days, you know what that is? That's a half year. That's 6 months. He displayed the vast wealth of his kingdom and the splendor and glory of his majesty. When these days were over, the king gave a banquet, lasting 7 more days, in the enclosed garden of the king's palace for all the people from the least to the greatest who were in the citadel of Susa. The garden had hangings of white and blue linen. Now this garden, the word garden actually means paradise. This was his own dreamy paradise. Fastened with cords of white linen and purple material to silver rings on marble pillars. There were couches of gold and silver on a mosaic pavement of porphyry, marble, mother of pearl, and other costly stones. Wine was served in goblets of gold, each one different from the other, and the royal wine was abundant, in keeping with the king's liberality. By the king's command, each guest was allowed to drink in his own way, for the king instructed all the wine stewards to serve each man what he wished. When Queen Vashti also gave a banquet for the women in the royal palace of Xerxes. On the seventh day, when the king Xerxes was in high spirits from wine, he commanded the seven eunuchs who served him, Muhammam, Bishthah, Harbanah, Bigthah, Abagthah, Zethrah, and Carcass to bring before him Queen Vashti, wearing her royal crown, in order to display her beauty to the people and the nobles, for she was lovely to look at. But when the attendants delivered the king's command, Queen Vashti refused to come. This is what you call a hard-headed woman. In those days, it didn't work. It didn't last very long. Women like this didn't last long. Then the king became furious and burned with anger. Since it was customary for the king to consult experts in matters of law and justice, he spoke with the wise men and understood the times and were closest to the king. Karshina, Jethah, Admathah, Tarshish, Meres, Marsena, and Mubakan, the seven nobles of Persia and Media, who had special access to the king and were the highest in that kingdom. According to the law, what must be done to Queen Vashti, he asked. She has not obeyed the command of the king Xerxes that the eunuchs have taken to her. When Mubakan replied in the presence of the king and nobles, Queen Vashti has done wrong. She had done wrong. No one in the kingdom can defy the king. Not only against the king, but also against all the nobles, the peoples of all the provinces of King Xerxes, for the queen's conduct will become known to all the women, so as they will despise their husbands and say, King Xerxes command Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she would not come. This very day, the Persian and Median women of the nobility have heard about the queen's conduct, will respond to all the queen's nobles in the same way, and there will be no end to this disrespect and discord among all the kingdom of the Medes and Persians. Therefore, if it pleases the king, let him issue a royal decree, and let it be written in the laws of Persian Media, which cannot be repealed. Once it was written in law, it could not be repealed. That Vashti is never again to enter the presence of King Xerxes. Also, let the king give her royal position to someone else who is better than she is. Then, when the king's edict is proclaimed among all of this vast realm, all the women will respect their husbands from the least to the greatest. The king and his nobles were pleased with his advice, so the king did as Menelikan proposed. He sent dispatches to all parts of the kingdom, each of the promise of his own script, in its own script, in its own language, to each person, to each people in his own language, proclaiming in each people's tongue that every man should be ruler over his own household, including the king. Later, when the anger of King Xerxes had subsided, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what he had decreed about her. Then the king's personal attendants proposed, let a search be made for a beautiful young virgin for the king. Let the king appoint commissioners to every province of his realm to bring all these beautiful virgins into the harem of the citadel of Susa, and let them be placed under the care of Haggai, the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women, and let beauty treatments be given to them, make them even more beautiful. And let the girl, the virgin who pleases the king, be queen instead of Vashti. And this advice appealed to the king, and he followed it. Now there was in the citadel of Susa a Jew of the tribe of Benjamin. Remember Benjamin? Saul. The Apostle Paul in the New Testament is of this lineage. Also Saul in the Old Testament king was of this lineage. A Jew of the tribe of Benjamin named Mordecai, son of Jair, son of Shimei, son of Kish, who had been carried into exile from Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. Among those taken captive with Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, Mordecai had a cousin named Hadashah, whom he had brought up because she had neither father or mother. And this girl was also known as Esther. Her other name, remember, look at this. She had Hadashah. Her another name was Esther, was lovely in form and features. Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her father and mother died. When the king's order and edict had been proclaimed, many girls were brought to the citadel of Susa and put under the care of Haggai. Esther also was taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Haggai, who had charge of the harem. Now, the people over these harems were eunuchs. The king did not trust any, what we call, intact man that was able of having sexual intercourse with these women. He had them made eunuchs, so they would not have the desire or the ability to do and to profane his wives. And the girl in the king's palace entrusted to Haggai, who had charge over them, and the girl pleased him and won his favor. Immediately he provided her with her beauty treatments and special food. He assigned to her 7 maids selected from the king's palace and moved her and her maids into the best palace or the best place in the harem. Esther had not revealed her nationality and the family background because Mordecai had forbidden her to do so. Every day he walked back and forth near the courtyard of the harem to find out how Esther was and what was happening to her. Before a girl's turn came to the king Artaxerxes, she had to be complete 12 months of beauty treatments, 1 year of beauty treatments, prescribed for the women, 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with perfumes and cosmetics. And this is how that she would go to the king. Anything she wanted was given to her to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. In the evening, she would go there, and in the morning return to another part of the harem to the care of Shaashgaz, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the concubines. She would not return to the king unless he was pleased with her and summoned her by name. God's eternal purpose and unpreventable progress, remember all of this. When the turn came for Esther, the girl Mordecai had adopted and the daughter of his uncle Abihail, to go to the king, she asked for nothing other than what Haggai, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of her harem, suggested, and Esther won the favor of everyone who saw her. She was taken to King Xerxes in the royal residence in the 10th month, the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign, and now the king was attracted to Esther more than any of the other women, and she won his favor and approval more than any of the other virgins. So he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And the king gave a great banquet and Esther's banquet for all his nobles and officials, and he proclaimed the holiday throughout all the provinces and distributed gifts with royal liberality. And when the virgins were assembled a second time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. But Esther had kept secret her family background and nationality, just as Mordecai had told her to do so. For she continued to follow Mordecai's instructions, as she had done when he was bringing her up. This was a faithful, obedient daughter. Even though she was his cousin, she was his daughter. During the time Mordecai was sitting in the king's gate, Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, became angry and conspired to assassinate King Artaxerxes. But Mordecai found out about the plot and told the queen Esther, who in turn reported to the king, giving credit to Mordecai. And when the report was investigated and found to be true, the two officials were impaled on the gallows. They were crucified. They had their clothes ripped off. They had a sharpened grease stake, and they were set on it until it went up to their rectum and into their innards, and they bled to death. This was the death sentence. They were not hanged by the neck. They were crucified in that early form. Estateros is the Greek word. Later on, the Greek Empire and the Roman Empire would change this and make it to where finally it was a cross with being nailed. It was a stake to begin with. They nailed their hands at the top, their feet at the bottom, and then an X, like a X. One hand here, one hand there, one foot there, one foot there. But they didn't live long enough. They wanted them to suffer longer. So they finally invented this towel cross, which was still of sorrows, and they nailed their hands with washers on them through their carpal tunnel area. And they nailed their feet together, and they put a little pedestal where they could set their butt on in the middle so they could live longer. It was not good for them. They'd even give them painkillers of wine and opium so they could live longer and stay in that terrible position. That's why Jesus was crucified. This is where it came from right here. This is where it originated. In chapter 3, after these things, Xerxes honored Haman and Hapathet, the Agagites, and elevated him and giving him... Go back up. And the report was found to be true, and the two officials were hanged on the gallows, were impaled on the gallows, on the stakes, and all this was recorded in the book of the annals in the presence of the king. After these things, King Artaxerxes honored Haman, son of Hammedatha, and the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a seat of honor higher than all the other nobles. All the royal officials in the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this during concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel down and pay homage to him, because it was against his religion, by the way. Then the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's command?" Day after day they spoke to him, and he refused to comply. Therefore they told Haman about it, and to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated, for he had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down and pay him honor, he was enraged. Having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned and was enraged. The idea of killing only Mordecai. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all the Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. In the 12th year of King Xerxes, in the fifth month, the first month, and in the month of Nisan, they cast the pur, that is the lot, in the presence of Haman to select the day and month. And the lot fell on the 12th month, in the month of Adar. Then Haman asked King Xerxes, "This is a certain people dispersed and scattered among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom, whose customs are different from those of all other people, who do not obey the king's laws. It is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them. And I will put 10,000 talents of silver into the royal treasury for the men to carry out this headhunt." They're going to have bounty hunters now. So the king took his signet ring from his finger and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite. Remember, this is the descendant of King Agag, who Saul spared. "The enemy of the Jews, and keep the money," the king said to Haman, "and do with the people as you please." Then in the 13th day of the 7th of the first month, and the royal secretaries were summoned, and they wrote down in script, each province in the language of its own people, all of Haman's orders to the king's satraps, governors, the governors in the various provinces, and the nobles of the various peoples. These were written in the name of King Xerxes himself and sealed with his own signet ring, in the name, by the authority, the exousia, unlimited power. Dispatches were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces with the order to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the Jews, young and old, women and little children, in a single day, the 13th day of the 12th month, and the month of Adar, and to plunder their goods. And a copy of the text and edict was issued as law in every province and made known to the people of every nationality, so that it would be ready for that day. Spurred on by the king's command, the couriers went out, and the edict was issued in the citadel of Susa, the capital city, down in the Persian Gulf, near the Persian Gulf. And the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Susa was bewildered. Haman and the king sat down to drink, but the city of Susa was bewildered. Chapter 4. When Mordecai learned of all that had been done, he tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went out into the city, wailing loudly. By the way, he's wailing and praying here. It doesn't say he was praying. The mention of God is not in here. But God is there. And he went out in the city wailing and bitterly, crying bitterly. But he went only as far as the king's gate, because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter it. And every province to which the edict and the order of the king came, there was a great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her about Mordecai, she was in great distress. She sent clothes for him to put on instead of the sackcloth, but he would not accept it. Then Esther summoned Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, assigned to attend her, and ordered him to find out what was troubling Mordecai and why. So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in the front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay in royal treasury for the destruction for the bounty hunting of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text and the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa, to show to Esther and explain to her. And he told him to urge her to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people. Hathach went back and reported to Esther and Mordecai had said, and then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, all the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any woman or man who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned to the king has but one law, that he is to be put to death. The only exception to this is for the king to extend the gold scepter to him and to spare his life. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back his answer. Do not think that because you are a king's house, you are alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. And that's what he's talking about, God. This is when God is returned. God's unpreventable progress and his eternal purpose. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to a royal position for such a time as this, God's eternal purpose. This is the parable of terrible circumstances and God's rescue, a parable of disaster and rescue. Then Esther sent to his this reply to Mordecai, go and gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. And I and my maids will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. If I die, I die. So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the palace in front of the king's hall. The king was sitting in his royal throne on the hall facing the entrance. When he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her and held out his golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. Then the king asked her, what is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom I will give it to you. And if it pleases the king, replied Esther, let the king, together with Haman, come today to a banquet that I have prepared for him. Bring Haman at once, the king said, so that he may do what Esther asked. So the king and Haman went into the banquet, and Esther prepared. As they were drinking wine, the king again asked Esther, now what is your petition? It will be given to you. And what is your request? Even up to the half the kingdom will be granted to you. Esther replied, my petition and my request is this. If the king regards me with a favor, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come tomorrow to the banquet, and I will prepare for them, and then I will answer the king's question there. Haman went out that day happy and high spirits. But he saw Mordecai at the king's gate and observed that he neither rose nor showed fear in his presence. And he was filled with rage against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home, calling together his friends Zeresh, his wife, and Haman boasted to them about his vast wealth and many sons and all the ways the king had honored him. And he had elevated him above all the other nobles and fishers. And that's not all, Haman added. I'm the only person Queen Esther invited to accompany the king to the banquet she gave. And she has invited me along with the king tomorrow. But all this gives me no satisfaction as long as I see Mordecai sitting at the king's gate. His wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, have a gallows built 75 feet in the air. This gallows now is a stake. It's not a hanging gallows, it's a stake. And ask the king in the morning to have Mordecai hanged on it, actually impaled on it. Then go with the king to the dinner and be happy. This suggestion delighted Haman, and he had the gallows built. They stayed up all night doing that, didn't they? That night, the king could not sleep, and he ordered the book of the Chronicles and the record of his reign. So it brought into him to read, and he was found the record there that Mordecai had exposed Bigtanah and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, who had conspired to assassinate King Artaxerxes. Nothing had been done for him, his attendants answered. Then the king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the palace and to speak to the king about hanging Mordecai on the gallows that he had erected. His attendants answered, "Haman is standing in the court. Bring him in," the king said. Then Haman entered, and the king asked him, "What would be done for a man who the king delights to honor?" Now Haman thought to himself, "Who is there that the king would rather honor than me?" So answered the king, "For the man the kingdom delights to honor, then bring a royal robe the king has worn, and a horse, and the king has ridden, and one of his royal crests placed on his head. Then let the robe and the horse be entrusted to one of the king's most noble princes. Let them robe the man that the king delights in honor, and lead him in the horse through the city's streets. Proclaiming him before this is what is done for the man whom the king delights to honor." "Go at once," the king answered Haman. Go get the robe and the horse to do just as you have suggested for Mordecai the Jew." Boy, talk about knocking him down on his feet. What was his features? What did his face look like when King Xerxes said this to him? "Just as you have suggested for Mordecai the Jew who sits at the king's gate, do not neglect anything that you have recommended." So Haman got the robe and the horse, and he robed Mordecai and led him on horseback. He led him on horseback through the cities, proclaiming before him, "This is what is done for the man whom the king desires to honor." And afterward, Mordecai returned to the king's gate. But Haman rushed home with his head covered in grief and told Zeresh, his wife, and all of his friends everything that had happened to him. And his advisors and his wife and Zeresh said to him, "Since Mordecai before you whom your downfall has started, if of Jewish origin you cannot stand against him, you will surely come to ruin. You can't destroy the Jewish people. God is for them, and Jehovah is greater than all men." Here, the name of God is referred to again, but not said. While they were all still talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried Haman away to the banquet that Esther had prepared. Now, we will read the rest of this and the rest of the story in our next message. If you heard this message, understand one thing. A lot of bad things happen to us around us all the time. But God, in all reality, in the end, is in control. If you haven't been born again, you need to be born again. If you're not living for the Lord like you ought to live for the Lord. Don't waste your time. Our Heavenly Father, we come to you. We send these words out to honor and glorify you. Forgive us where we fail you. Help us to glorify you in our lives. And help us to remember that your eternal purpose and unpreventable progress will come about. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.